today. No, he wants to do it Friday.
Tonight, my grandson is playing at the Excel Center.
Afternoon. We're going to call this meeting State Department Veterans Budget Division to order. It's about 12 minutes after 4 on Wednesday, March 25th, 2015. A quorum is present. Members, today we have four bills on the agenda. We are going to start with Senator Rest and Senate File 829, a bill relating to mobile cosmetologists. Next will be Senator Stumpf and Senate File 1676, a bill dealing with Department of Administration Commerce. Then Senator Carlson, Senate File 1415, a bill relating to campaign finance, public disclosure. Last but not least will be Senator Claussen. His file, Senate File 1503, as the Minnesota Historical Society's budget request for the upcoming biennium. It is my intention to lay these bills over possible inclusion in the omnibus budget bill. With that, welcome to the committee, Senator Rest.
Thank you.
With your testifier. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the bill actually is Senate File 839. I think you said 29, but it's 839.
Very good. And duly noted.
Just to put the bill in a little bit of context, last fall I was approached by my constituent, Charlene Samara, who's seated to my left, about the possibility of allowing mobile salons for cosmetologists. And since that time, I have worked with her and the Board of Cosmetology. Ms. Gina Strauss is to my right, and she is their executive director. And on how we would go about doing that, and if you'd look at the Senate summary, why mobile salons are not specifically prohibited in the law, but because of the way in which the law reads, they are in effect prohibited. What is the necessity for having a mobile salon? Right now, licensed cosmetologists, as my constituent, visit homeless shelters, they visit shelters for battered women, and bring their services to them in an attempt to help them feel dignified in their lives and to be uplifting. Right now, that service is not itself prohibited, but when they go to these locations, they need to bring all of their supplies out of their car or their van into the facility, and then when they are finished giving the services, they have to load them back all in their vehicles. And so the solution to that great inconvenience, quite frankly, was to allow mobile salons, that is, where they could go to a location and clients could come out to the salon. That brought up an issue with the League of Cities with regard to ordinances in cities, so that it would be clear that mobile salons would not be in competition with fixed location salons, and that cities would be able to have an ordinance and also have conversation with the Board of Cosmetology as it developed rules for these mobile salons that would not interfere with regular operation of salons. So you wouldn't have in a shopping center a mobile salon pulling up outside of a fixed location salon. So that brought about Senate File 839, and it has passed through state and local government. It is here because the bill provides for rulemaking and the fiscal. You have the fiscal note, and the fiscal note of $45,000 was developed by Ms. Strauss and the Board of Cosmetology to account for the rulemaking that would be required. Again, right now, the statute does not allow the practice of cosmetology except in a licensed salon. And the rules for obtaining a licensed salon license are such that they can only be met by in a fixed location. And so, therefore, it's not legal to practice cosmetology in a mobile salon. Again, even though there's no law that expressly forbids it. So the bill would make mobile salons legal by requiring the board to establish rules that allow a mobile facility to be a licensed salon. It's a strange prohibition by omission, but that's what it is in the bill. We have not heard any objection to it. We have worked with the League of Cities, and they suggested language in the on the second page to protect licensed salons that are in a fixed location, and no one has testified against the bill. We on page 2, line 221, there is a blank for an appropriation that comes from the fiscal note, but I spoke with your CA, and we don't need to put that number in now, but if you do consider it for your omnibus bill, the fiscal note has been developed, and it is $45,000, and it is for the purpose of adding the rules to the rules for licensed salons at fixed locations, licensed salons at that are operated on a mobile basis.
Okay. Chairman.
Senator Knudsen, do you have a question?
No, I just is there anybody opposed to this? I mean, it went through the other committee, and you said not, and is there anybody here that would like to speak against it? I think it makes sense. I don't think we have to.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Knudsen, thank you for the inquiry, and we've had no no objection, including from licensed salons at fixed locations.
Well, I think you did a good job.
And the board is, and you can ask Ms. Strauss directly, the board has no objection to this bill moving forward.
Well, I think with that explanation, and I think you did a good job. I don't need them because I think you've got the votes, and I would move the bill, and where does it go to there?
Well, we're going to lay it on the table for inclusion.
Well, that's right, but okay.
So is there any questions from the committee, first of all? Okay, and it probably would not be a bad idea, Ms. Stoss, if you did repeat what the senator said, that you have no objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Gina Stoss, and I am the executive director for the Board of Cosmetology, and Senator Rest is correct. The idea of a mobile salon was accepted by the board as an opportunity to be able to license in another fashion. And as Senator Rest stated, just in lines 2.1 to 2.15, I was here, you know, a few weeks ago testifying to our budget request, and we're looking that if this passed, went through on its own, that we would need an adjustment to be able to write the rules and modify the database as the fiscal note indicates. But we are supportive of the initiative.
All right. Very good. And Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question for Ms. Stoss. Why is there a permanent need for another FTE? I mean, I can understand maybe some initial work, but inspections are mostly the same. And I'm just wondering why that remains all the way through.
Ms. Stoss.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Senator Gazalka, the The halftime position that's looked at in the fiscal note is to write the rules, is just to write the rules, and then that position would phase out. And starting in the fiscal year 2018 biennium, as I indicated 2 weeks ago in my testimony, we can't inspect annually right now to the current volume of salons we have. So to add another type of salon in, we would need an inspector to be able to do this. And there's some additional requirements in between lines 1.15 to 1.19 that mobile salons carry, you know, finding them. They're not necessarily housed, so there's some additional like prep work to be able to find their location unannounced that we anticipate. And we don't have the current staffing volume to add more licenses.
One last Senator comment. Gazzalka. This is more of a general based on your last comment. I did talk to some people that do hair since our last conversation about did they really want to be inspected every year, because mm-hmm. that was part of the testimony, and they said, no way do we want to be inspected every year. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I just want to, because some of the testimony from, I don't know if it was you or the gentleman, but it was like they want to be inspected every year, and so I wanted to at least bring that up, that I've been trying to do some research, and I do have some concern about that.
Yeah. But and Senator Gazzalka, what you're saying is not that they shouldn't be inspected every year, but they don't necessarily want to be, and that's what was expressed at the last meeting.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, because it was part of it was because the comment from the testifiers then was that they all want to be professional, they want to be, and they were saying, no, we want to be professional, but you know, if you're inspected every year, that means you have the potential of a fine every year. And I don't know of any other industry that they, or very few, that are inspected every year. It's a little more random.
Okay. Ms. Samara, would you like comments, or are you fine?
I'm fine.
Good. Very good. Any other comments from the audience, from the public? Okay. Now, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Senate File 839. Next is Senate File 1676. Senator Stump.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, and
welcome, Senator Stump.
Senate File 1676 is a proposal to it streamlines and kind of clarifies one of the grant management provisions, and then also it has a provision that. It's called a Guaranteed Energy Savings Program, and that's kind of a hidden gem, I think, that's in statute and run by the Department of Administration that is interesting to find out about, and I think many local units of government could benefit from. And we have some representatives here that can kind of walk through the bill and kind of bring you up to speed as to what it does.
You gentlemen, just identify yourselves and go ahead.
Thank you very much. Excuse me, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matt Shear. I'm the legislative director for the Department of Administration. And Senate File 1676, which is before you today, consists of two different policy change items for the Department of Administration. Sections 1 through 3 of the bill, the purpose of those sections is to eliminate confusion over the oversight role and clarify the authority of the Office of Grants Management. Admin's Office of Grants Management, as you may recall, was created in 2007 as a result of an Office of the Legislative Auditor program report that suggested that we needed more oversight over non-capital grants. And the authority for that office is prescribed in sections 16B.97 and 16B.98. When the statute was written, 16B97 and 98 were intended to be linked and to inform each other that these were to govern non-capital grants, and that capital grants were governed under 16A, which is overseen by the Department or Minnesota Management and Budget. Excuse me. And so this the sections 1 through 3 of the bill clarify that Office of Grants Management oversees and provides enterprise-wide leadership for non-capital grants, and 16A, which is Minnesota Management and Budget, is overseen by the Minnesota Management and Budget. And then Section 4 of the bill is, Senator Stumpf referenced, Mr. Chair and committee members, is the Guaranteed Energy Savings Program. And this section of the bill is a program that is under the Department of Administration's statutes, but is run in concert with the Department of Commerce. And at this point, I'll turn it over to Bill Grant from the Department of Commerce to describe the change in this section.
Mr. Grant.
Mr. Chairman and members, Bill Grant for the Department of Commerce. And thanks for the opportunity to speak to this provision within 1676. There are really two changes that we're seeking, and just by way of background, this section of statute helps us administer the Guaranteed Energy Savings Program, a project that was reinforced by executive order in 2011 that we've been operating since then. It's intended to help state agencies become more energy efficient, and we have run into two issues with contracts for energy savings programs that this bill is intended to address. The first expands the types of financing that can be used in a guaranteed energy savings project so that it's not limited just to lease purchase arrangements, but can also rely on bonds and other forms of funding. The second change really is the most important from our perspective. It modifies two conflicting paragraphs to clarify how agencies can contribute funds to a project. Capital contribution means an agency can contribute funds that will buy down the cost of a project to the point where the energy savings meet or exceed the payments that would be due under the project financing. Essentially, this allows an agency that has an energy savings project but has other operation and maintenance or infrastructure improvements that they would like to make at the same time, be able to contribute their own funds toward those aspects of the project so that it doesn't impact the energy savings associated, so the projects can then self-fund. And that's a requirement of the statute and of the executive order. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, but those are the changes that are in front of you.
Questions from the committee? You three gentlemen must have done a pretty good job of explaining it. Senator Stumpf, we're going to take Senate File 1676 and lay it on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'd make that motion.
Thank you. It's on the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Next, we have Senator Carlson, Senate File 1450. Welcome, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr.
Seems
Chair.
Seems like I just saw you right up here.
Yeah, I reappeared here. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have Senate File 1450, which is a rather simple bill that makes a few changes that to clean up some language in the past and also makes a request on a budget appropriation. The Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board has had a long history of moving their charges for the Office of Administrative Hearings from one appropriation to another account. And I don't think I'll go through all of the history unless you really want to hear it, because it's a lot of errors and statute. But when we get down to the bottom line, what's happened is we've left out some pieces not being changed, and we need to change the language that directs the Office of Administrative Hearing to directly charge the public subsidy account, because they're actually doing this by a direct appropriation. And a language in the rider of the Office of Administrative Hearing appropriation needs to be repealed also. And this is to correct the, like I mentioned, the series of minor changes that have gone back and forth throughout the years, actually dating back to the year 2000. Another section in the bill is to transfer some funds because the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board has not fully completed their improvements to their website and anticipates approximately $150,000 of unexpended funds at the end of this fiscal year. The bill would transfer the funds back to the board for the completion of their website redevelopment and require the board to report to the State Department Finance Divisions in the House and Senate in January 2016 on the status of the website redevelopment, including specific budget expenditures to date and the anticipated completion date. I have with me here Mr. Jeff Sigurdson, who is the Assistant Director of the Campaign Finance Board, to answer any particular questions on the history and how this will be handled.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. Mr. Sigurdson, do you want to identify yourself? And do you have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Jeff Sigurdson, Assistant Director of the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. Basically, Senator Carlson certainly covered the two sections. Again, Section 1 is obsolete language that hasn't been used since fiscal year 2009. And then Section 2, we work with Mr. Lundeen on this issue, so it will not affect the overall budget numbers that you're working with. It's just putting money back to the state fund and then giving it back to us after the beginning of the fiscal year. There is a MMB change order that would make the ability for agencies to carry forward unused funds into the next biennium available to all state agencies. The board has no policy position on that. Administratively, that would have the same effect as this language, although it wouldn't direct it specifically to web development. So you're aware of that.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? All right. If there's no questions, all the changes, necessary changes, are made in Senate File 1450. We're going to lay it on the table for inclusion and possible inclusion of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. Senate File 1503, Senator Clausen, Minnesota Historical Society. Senator Clausen, it's all yours.
Well, good afternoon, Chairman Saxhog and committee members, and thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 1503, which provides for an appropriation to the Minnesota Historical Society. I'm a bit of a history buff, and so in presenting this bill, I kind of went back and looked at a little bit of history for the Minnesota Historical Society. And it's interesting to note that the society was actually enacted in 1849, before we actually became a state. And it was for the purpose of collecting and preserving the story of Minnesota. And I don't think that's really changed much, as you will see. The appropriation request we are asking for today is consistent with that mission statement of over 100 years ago by the Founding Fathers. And there are four main appropriations that are identified in Section 1 of the bill. There is the base appropriation for the Historical Society, and then an explanation of three specific projects. First, to provide capacity to deliver the mission of the Historical Society through programs and services across Minnesota. Second, to provide funds for a digital preservation and access initiative. And then third, provide funds for activities relating to history education. And with us today from the Historical Society to explain in greater depth the appropriation request is Stephen Elliott, Executive Director of Minnesota Historical Society, and Peggy Ingeson, the Chief Financial Officer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Mr. Elliott, Ms. Ingeson, identify yourself and continue on.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Saxhog. I'm Steve Elliott, the Director and CEO of the Minnesota Historical Society, and thank you, Senator Clausen, for introducing Senate File 1503. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for taking some time to review and for the committee's taking the time to review our budget request for the next biennium. We sincerely appreciate the support of the people of Minnesota through the legislature. that provides valuable services to Minnesotans, school kids, families, tourists, family history detectives, academics, authors, and many others. We're able to serve nearly 1 million people in person each year and about 2.5 million visitors to our website and the resources there. Base funding that the state provides creates a solid foundation for this work. Funding from the state's general fund pays for the talented staff who carry out the work and the basic operating costs such as heating, lighting, cleaning our 130-some buildings that from which we serve the public. And I'd like to emphasize that we work hard to supplement the state's funding from the general fund with funding from earned income and contributions. Funding from the general fund creates a strong base in which non-state funds help to deliver a better history program to more people. Mr. Chair, I know that you and members of the committee are familiar with the work that we do, but a quick word about that. We're one of the oldest educational institutions in the state. We're a statewide organization with more than 26,000 members, and we administer historic sites all around the state. We provide field service support to local history and heritage organizations, and we administer grants that support work in every corner of the state. We're the state archives for the people of Minnesota, and we're stewards of rich and diverse cultural resources and collections, which we work to make readily accessible to researchers and users. We help to preserve the built environment through our Historic Preservation Office's activities. And at our core, we work to make all those resources meaningful as an educational organization. We provide educational resources for students, teachers, and lifelong learners. The Minnesota Studies curriculum that we produce for the sixth grade classes align with state mandated social studies standards, and we provide training for teachers so that they can be most effective working with that curriculum with their students. We also provide many opportunities for young people to gain exposure to learning through history through a variety of means, including the History Day program at the secondary level, which involves more than 25,000 students across the state, museum fellows programs, internships, and many others. I'd like to introduce Peggy Ingeson, our Chief Financial Officer, who will walk you through some of the particulars.
Welcome, Ms. Ingeson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am Peggy Ingeson, Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota Historical Society. And I thought if it works for you, Mr. Chair and members, I would just give a brief overview of our budget from the document. And I'm certainly not going to go through the budget document, but just to orient you a little bit, in the first page, there's a pie chart that looks at the overall funding. And you can see a little bit of the trend in you're in the annual report and not the budget document. Okay, is that?
To where are we?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I was thinking about the budget document, actually. And this, in the annual report, this chart is similar, but it's an orientation towards the financial statements. So it's slightly different than the way the budget documents are put together. So it's a pie chart that gives you a sense of our revenues and our expenses, but it's a little bit different. It's prettier because it's in color. But in the budget document, it shows the overall general funding. This is really just looking at our financial statements in the annual report. But you still will be able to get a sense of how the state appropriation fits with the other resources. And I was just going to mention a little bit about what's in the document. We actually have three programs, the way the appropriation and the base budget is made. We have programs. Our programs and operations are the largest category of funding in the program. That includes the major portion of general funds that come to the agency through our base budget, roughly $21.3 million per year that fund our activities, as our CEO has described. And in addition, we have two other program areas in our budget. One is the Historic Preservation Tax Credit Grant in Lieu of Credit Program. This is a statutory program that was instituted several years ago, and people who avail themselves of that can either take a tax credit or opt to take a grant in lieu of the credit. It's for preservation of privately owned historic buildings, and there's a tax credit program that piggybacks on the federal tax preservation, historic preservation program. And then the third program that's shown on our budget pages is called Fiscal Agents. This is pass-through funding that goes to five organizations that where the funding, we don't have responsibility for these functions, but the funding passes through our agency. And, Mr. Chair, maybe to take a few moments, if it's all right, to talk a little bit about
Absolutely.
Our requests that you see delineated in the bill that Senator Claussen is before you. First is the request for what we're describing as our maintaining the infrastructure of the organization. Our request is $1.3 million. This is primarily for salaries and other inflationary cost increases. You will see the governor has made a recommendation for a portion of funding, a portion of our request, but funding for this item in his budget recommendation. The second, and again, that request primarily allows us to continue our activities and functions and absorb the cost increases for salary and other inflationary expenses as we operate our network of sites and programs throughout the state. The second request, and you'll see this delineated in the bill as well, is what we're calling the digital preservation and access. And this request, we may have talked briefly about this when we were in front of the committee before. And for those of you who have visited our History Center building, you've had the chance to see the records and the documents that we keep and preserve and the responsibilities we have for those. What we're looking at is really the dramatic changes in the last 20 years have been creating a lot more content digitally. And our ability to preserve that, we need to build the infrastructure to preserve that, both with existing records that are created to make them more accessible to users of the information, and then also to maintain and fulfill our responsibility to preserve these records. The dollars that we're requesting would give us the chance to do some planning and preparing some of the standards that information should be preserved for. And we would be looking at equipment and technology and other staffing resources to begin to digitize existing records that and make that more accessible to people who wouldn't be able to come to our History Center, make it more broadly available, but in addition to digitize existing records and make digitize or maintain and preserve records that are created in a digital format to begin with. So that's a significant increase, and we think that this is important for us to begin to build that infrastructure of standardizing for records. Our third request is, as you heard us talk about the educational services that we deliver to educators and students, and we would like the chance request is $325,000 per year to continue to provide those education services more broadly to students across the state and to teacher training and curriculum. So, Mr. Chair, members appreciate your support and happy to answer any questions that you have about our requests
Committee.
Or our existing base funding, for that matter.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What was your... So I'm looking through documents here. What was the total state appropriation for you last year?
Mr. Chair and Senator, it may be easiest to look at the budget document if you have
inside,
that
inside
you.
The governor's book here?
Yes. And on page 3 of that document, you'll see the total appropriation. So for the general fund, for this, our spending would be $22,176,000 and $22,459,000. If you see that page 3 of that.
Yep. Okay. Now I figured it. Numbers. Yeah, I saw that before. Thank you. Yeah.
Yes, and Mr. Chair and Senator, that you'll see the arts and there's a little bit of reconciling to do with the numbers because it gets a little bit confusing, but. You'll see that's the general fund appropriation that includes the three programs I talked about, the largest being our programs and operations, but it also includes the grant in lieu of credit program for historic preservation, as well as the pass-through to grants to other organizations, the five other organizations.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, thank you very much. It helps. I saw those, and just clarification was good. Thank you. And the second part of that was you kind of answered it, that items 1, 2, and 3 on your request, you said that's included in the general fund appropriation from this year and from last year, correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator, those three items are new requests
that we're making
over and above the base. So you'll see that actually the base for our general fund at $24.8 million in fiscal 16, $21.3 of that is for our programs and operations. And then these three requests before you are in addition to that.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, one last one. So that helps out. You kind of followed where I was going. So 1, 2, and 3 are new requests. My thought is I understand. I'm a history guy, too. I like this stuff. I love what you do around the state. They were in the office, and I do appreciate all that stuff, although I don't think you need to enlarge their building. But I like what you do around the state. So
do I, Senator Chamberlain.
So I'm nice occasionally. So I do like what you do good work. But, it just seems like huge bumps. I know you kind of explained that. Those just seem like huge requests, new requests for doing this stuff and outside the normal appropriation. And maybe you mentioned it. Why is it outside the normal appropriation? Why wouldn't you include it in the normal appropriation?
Ms. Ingerson.
Mr. Chair and Senator, we would be willing to accept the added funding even if it's part of the regular appropriation. What we're asking for is the additional funds in recognition of the cost increases to maintain the infrastructure that we have with that first request, and to really be able to make more progress on the digital preservation and access, recognizing that the creation of digital content as well as the materials that that we have would actually help to avoid using the space for the paper. But it's really important to create this infrastructure to preserve and make the information more accessible going forward.
Okay, and then just one last one, Mr.
Yes,
Chair.
Yes, Senator Chamberlain.
One last question. So thank you for the response. And so you anticipate this as an ongoing, continuing type of appropriation in the coming years? Items 1, 2, and 3?
Ms. Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Other questions? Now, does anybody else have any questions? Any other testifiers?
I have one last comment.
Oh, Senator Chamberlain.
I this is just on a lighter note. I love this stuff, but it's going to end up in the trash here. So
no.
You want it back?
Chair,
you have it back?
Senator, David Kelleher will collect it back.
Okay, thank you.
He's very good at recycling.
I love this stuff. It's great. But, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we thank you all for coming for your testimonies, Senator Claussen. We're gonna take Senate File 1503 and put it on the table for possible inclusion. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, That committee, when we come back from break, that means that this is the last time we're going to meet before break. We'll be meeting on Tuesdays and Thursdays in the afternoon, as well as our regular scheduled times on Monday and Wednesdays. And it's my intent to have one more hearing for the Veterans and Military Affairs Subdivision. And then my office will keep everybody posted, but you know, we have to crank this bill out, so it'll take some time. But I appreciate everybody showing up, and have a good vacation.
Too.
Be adjourned.